This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Matt, I'm so excited to move over to you. It's good to have you with us back, Graham. Missed you last week, but
good to be with you
live. Good to have you.
Yeah, so where are we? I think we're a lot higher in rate, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to blame me again this time, though?
Yeah, we always blame you, Matt. Got to have someone. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll accept the blame. Yeah, we kind of, in a way, sort of saw this coming. We knew that we were going to have a break of the consolidation pattern that had been forming in bonds. That's just a series of higher lows and lower highs that has been going on for about 2 months. And the Fed meeting was well positioned at the apex of that consolidation. And we thought that would be the source of inspiration for a breakout. We got a breakout. It was Fed week. So should we blame the Fed? The surprising answer is, maybe, sort of. It's a very, very interesting 3 days, starting with Wednesday of last week being the Fed. Before that, we had some economic data. Residential construction was a little bit stronger than expected. Existing home sales, right in line with expectations. And then on Friday, new home sales ended up being a little stronger than expected. So solid housing market data there. But the focus was certainly on the Fed. And the Fed definitely delivered, but perhaps with a little bit of a delayed reaction. So why do we say the market sort of reacted to the Fed? The main reason is because if you look at the actual trading on Wednesday afternoon itself, after the Fed announcement, there was not any huge movement. So big move last week, but really none of it happened on Fed day. Part of the reason is timing, because the Fed doesn't come out until 2 p.m. and then Powell doesn't start talking until 2:30. But that really hasn't stopped the market from reacting to the Fed on Fed day in the past. Mm-hmm. So what else could be going on? What did they say? Let's talk about what they said. If you haven't caught it already, of course, they left rates unchanged because they're not going to be hiking those for quite a while. We're dealing with tapering and bond purchases for now. But they did shift the verbiage of the announcement in such a way that foreshadowed tapering rather overtly, saying, quote, if progress continues broadly as expected, the committee judges that a moderation in the pace of asset purchases may soon be warranted. So that's the first time they've had that phrase in there since COVID and since before COVID for that matter. But yep, it's our first overt indication that tapering is on the way. It's consistent with other Fed speeches. At the same time as the announcement came out, the dot plot also came out in the Fed summary of economic projections. And that showed that the median Fed member was seeing higher rates across the board, not insanely higher, but in moving in that direction, as if to say, no, we're not really worried about the Delta variant and COVID cases derailing the recovery or our intent to hike rates in the future. I had all that. Markets didn't budge at 2 p.m. Really,
yeah,
a little
amazing
bit of back and forth movement. Yeah, it was amazing. And then Powell started talking, and he's obviously not watching markets as he's speaking, but it almost was like he was and really wanted to take the opportunity while bonds were super flat to lay it all out. And near the end of the press conference, he ended up saying something to the effect of, yeah, no, we are pretty much on track to taper in November, and it would take a really bad jobs report to talk us out of it. And ultimately said, all we really need is a decent jobs report at the beginning of next month for us to announce tapering in November. It sounds like it's a little bit sensational, but really it's in line with what various Fed speeches have been moving toward. And I think it's in line with what the market was expecting coming into the Fed day. And even after that, there really wasn't a ton of movement in the bond market, and bonds ultimately closed stronger at the best levels of the day by the time they hit the 5 p.m. close. So pretty remarkable that the Fed basically says, yeah, we're tapering at the next meeting and bonds don't budge and maybe gain a little bit of ground. Following morning was when things really went you know where. And this was one of those market movements where you have traders and analysts and armchair quarterbacks, everybody and their brothers and sisters trying to come up with the reason that the Fed is the easy scapegoat, but it's definitely not that simple. There was a laundry list of potential market movers being thrown around by smart, smart people. And just give you a taste of some of those. Number one would be the stock market interaction with bonds over the course of the week, because we came into that week with bonds much stronger thanks to stocks just tanking severely. And that was that Evergrande stuff previous Monday morning. And before that, bonds were selling off rather aggressively heading into the end of the previous week. So we could look at it in the sense of stocks selling off so much that it sort of made the bond market stop and consider, oh, well, we have this safe haven buying right now, so we're going to chill for a little bit and then wait to see what's going on after the Fed. And then Thursday morning, there was some overnight news, some traction with the Evergrande thing, and their bondholders were supposed to get paid later on Thursday, and stocks were bouncing. They were being resilient. They weren't really freaking out about what the Fed had to say either. So now the bond market sort of just moved back in line with the trend that was in place before the Evergrande drama hit. And in that sense, the move wasn't that big. It was just sort of a continuation of the move that was already in play, potential X factor that's not immediately apparent. And then there was chatter from European Central Bank officials. There was a hawkish Bank of England announcement, and there was some indication that foreign investors were pricing in the Fed's updated dot plot, and the market was just sort of trading all of this out. All of that led to significant weakness in the European bond market overnight. And as we know, we take a solid amount of guidance from what Europe is doing overnight. German bund yields were at their highest since early July, and that pushed treasuries higher and higher until the morning hours when 10-year yields broke 1.4. That was a big technical trigger. They hit a couple technical triggers in that zone, 1.38 one, and then 1.4. And there was a snowball sell-off. People sort of in that mood where, gosh, everybody around me is selling bonds so quick, I'm just going to sell first and ask questions later. By the end of the day, we were significantly higher, and the 10-year yields ultimately made it as high as 1.437. That's a big move. 1.43-ish is also a technical line in the sand, so maybe we were seeing some support. Then comes Friday, and we sold off even more. And you could explain that one however you want, David. Yeah. It could be momentum. Yeah. It could be anxiety heading into this week's auction cycle, which is condensed because we have a 2-year and 5-year auction this morning. Okay. No fanfare there. And then a 7-year auction tomorrow. Normally, that 3-auction cycle would take place over Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So when it happens earlier in the week, it can sort of cause buyers to shy away at the end of the previous week and maybe a little bit more aggressively than they otherwise would ahead of an auction cycle. So the big X factor, the one we haven't talked about yet, and I know I've gone a little over my time here, but just to put this to bed, and this is a 2-cent thing, it's not necessarily the way it is, but when you look at the charts overlaid, it does make a lot of sense. COVID cases dropped a lot faster than a lot of people were expecting last week, talking about week over week averages for the entire country. And that has had strong correlation with sort of big picture momentum moves in the bond market. It would not surprise me at all if that was the driving force behind some of these trades that don't have readily apparent driving forces. We have an unseen hand contributing to bond market momentum. And I think it is a fairly visible hand in the form of COVID cases falling faster than expected, faster than the UK precedent suggested they would. And if that continues, then I think that it could continue to put upward pressure on rates, although yeah, traders and analysts are expecting some dip buying to take place sometime pretty soon. Let's hope we get some dip buying because nobody likes quite this much volatility in the bond market.
Nope. Dip buying, I think we'll be seeing that. I think it's all of the above. I think you're suggesting what's driving it, the anxiety. So, Jack, you got to jump in on that.
Well, the bond market's been trading in that 125 to 145 range. David, there's so many different influences that are moving the bond market that as long as it stays in that range, I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah, I'm chuckling only because one of your old employees said, look, don't ask him questions like that. He's retired. He doesn't have to look at the markets anymore. So that cracks me up. You got a lot of friends out there, Jack. So anyway, had to get your commentary on it. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of factors moving into it. We're so glad to have you, Matt, here. And I want to get on to Alice's. Are you going to be able to stick around or you got to go back to monitoring the market?
No, in fact, I haven't even written up the 5-year Treasury auction yet.
Oh,
I got to jump on MBS and do that.
Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you so much, friend. Good stuff.
Yeah, have a good one, Danny. Thank you.
Man, appreciate it. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Lenders One, Accelerate Mobility, Mortgage Market Intelligence, Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Group, SnapDocs, and the Mortgage Collaborative. We're going to have Finastra. Karen Jenkins will be here as our special guest next week on with Finastra. You'll be excited about that conversation. We talked about some of the things and initiatives that Finastra has underway, as well as their focus as a leader in the world of technology, fintech. So be sure to come back here next week. Folks, thank you so much for being here, listening. Jack, thank you so much for joining in again. Need to make this a habit. Appreciate your commentary. And listeners, thank you for taking time to listen. Have a great rest of your week and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.